This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
In a world where overspending, debt, and keeping up with the Joneses rules us all, where the voices from the merchants, restaurants, and credit companies lord over the common man, out of the darkness, like a beacon of hope, comes a new voice. A voice that's rich and creamy, like your favorite butter, and delicious, like cheeseburger pizza on your diet cheat day. It's the Stacking Benjamin Show.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today you'll learn how to be better in your job from two women who've excelled in their careers, former Pepsi COO Grace Puma and former Nike president of Consumer Direct, Christiana Smith Shee. In our headlines, it's tax time, and we've got you covered there with America's IRA expert, Ed Slott. Plus, we'll hear why one stacker said, I'd better call Saul. See hi and OG. And of course, I'll also carve out time to share some mini trivia. And now, two guys who just might make it in personal finance after all, it's Joe and OJJJJG.
Hey there, stackers, and man, what an action-packed day. I mean, Doug, when you said Grace Puma and Christiana Smith Shee, I mean, former COO of Pepsi, former president Consumer Direct at Nike, and then Ed Slott, it's like, but wait, there's more.
Heads exploding.
It's a big day. You know, so many people struggle in their career, and Christiana and Grace have done just a wonderful job of mentoring so many younger people on being better at their job and getting further, getting more out of your career. We're going to talk to them later. Ed Slott first, but first, the guy across the card table from me, he's probably going to answer a listener letter later on. Mr. OG's here. How are you, buddy?
Par for the course. I am here. Yeah, I'm great.
Present and accounted for.
Present and accounted for, sir.
Just, I'm breathing and I'm here when you told me to be here. I mean, what more do you want from me?
That's the enthusiastic.
I was punctual. I'm not drunk. I mean, like, what else? What kind of rules we got around this place?
I got one hand tied behind my back.
Who needs the COO of Pepsi and the president of Nike Consumer Direct when you got OG? Just don't be drunk and show up on time. You're good.
Just filling the room with energy today, isn't he, Joe?
You didn't see me wave. I waved enthusiastically. I was like this. I did like the Forrest Gump wave.
This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Lieutenant Dan.
Sorry.
Love how the Forrest Gump wave changes when we go to the sponsor spot.
You don't walk.
Do
no
that
more.
One again, OG.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh boy, it's getting thick in here already. We got to make sure the room is clean.
I'm invested in some fruit company, and I don't have to worry about money no more.
You know, one last thing, as I would say.
One last thing.
Grace Puma, Christiana Smith-Shee, and Ed Slott. We'll start with Ed Slott. So play the open bumper for us, Steve, so we can move around the microphones.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Well, just in time for tax day, some people, you know, every spring they think about the groundhog. We think about Ed Slott back on Stacking Benjamins. That's the sign that spring, Ed, is almost here. The fact that you're here. How you been?
Good. You know, and I do all these interviews at tax time and everybody asks the same question. So I'm going to ask the question and answer it and then we can move on. All Everybody's right. doing their taxes on every TV show, and this has been going on for 20, 30 years. So let's just get this off the table. People say, Ed, it's tax time, just like you did. Say, very predictable. What can people do to save on their taxes they're filling out now? Here's the answer. Nothing. Nothing. Unless you had a time machine, that already happened. What you should be doing is looking ahead. Yeah, you'll look at your taxes and then you'll do the same thing you did last year. Oh, if I only did this. Oh, if I could have done this, this whole woulda, coulda, shoulda. That's in the books. So when people ask, what can I do now? There's very few things, maybe an IRA contribution, a deduction or something like that. But that's it, really. So let's move off of that and do some big picture planning where you can save taxes for the rest of your life.
And not even little taxes, Ed. We're talking big money.
Yeah, big money. Taxes on millions of dollars some people have in their IRAs and 401k or hundreds of thousands. You know, there's a lot of people with the stock run-up that have looked at their IRAs and 401k and say, wow, look at all this money. This is great. Yeah, it's also great for Uncle Sam, too. Let me remind people that not all of that money is yours. I say in every consumer seminar, your IRA is an IOU to the IRS. It's not all your money. You don't even know what part of it is your money. You'll be lucky if half of it is. At least with a joint account, like with your husband or wife, you know it's half and half. You have a joint account with Uncle Sam, who's not even your real uncle, by the way. You have a joint account with Uncle Sam and his half might be 60 or 70% by the time you reach in for yours. So the big picture is to get that balance down, not build it up. Stop contributing to IRAs and 401ks. It's really just a loan. Yes, you get a deduction, but it's really just a loan you're taking from the government that will have to be repaid at some time in the future when tax rates might be much higher. So the big message is take advantage of today's low tax rates. People have RMDs. Don't wait for RMDs, required minimum distributions. Get some money out now. Do Roth conversions. So at tax time, when you do all these things in 1 year or in several years, and there's going to be that time at tax time when I'm on the show and people be listening and say, well, I don't even have any taxes on my retirement account.
Bam. Yeah. Well, 50 things to unpack there. First, the fact that Uncle Sam's not my real uncle might startle some people. Might need some therapy there, Ed. No, we don't need ancestry DNA to know that. But it's funny because I quote you all the time. I'm like, when we've had Ed Slott on the show and he talks about the fact that this traditional IRA, this traditional 401k, is a joint account with the government. People always look at me the same way they look at you when you say that, which is, as this grows later on, you got to pay the tax. And when you pay the tax, part of that growth is going to Uncle Sam. When you say this incendiary phrase, stop contributing to IRAs and 401ks, you're not saying don't save for retirement.
No.
And you're also not saying don't use tax advantaged accounts. Just be a little bit more strategic. What are you really saying there?
Yeah, Roth IRAs, especially young people, if you have hopefully some young listeners that have opportunities that we didn't have to start from ground zero from their first day, young people should only be doing Roth 401ks at work and Roth IRAs on their own. Why start building a taxable account? We didn't have that opportunity. The only way we can get it to tax-free is to pay the tax now, but still rates are very low. Plus, you have inflation. You know, everybody complains about inflation because it means things cost more. But when it comes to taxes, inflation is great, like Frosted Flakes. It's great. Why? Because the rates don't change, but the brackets expand each year and more money can come out at these historic levels, 22%, 24%, getting hundreds of thousands out. I'm worried. I'm worried about that four-letter word, which nobody wants to talk about, math. I'm worried about the math, the debt and deficit levels. At some point, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Congress will just keep kicking the can down the road. But at some point, tax rates are going to have to go up. And who's going to be caught in the soup when the music stops? It's going to be the people that did nothing, that have these large IRAs and 401ks. It's just a tax time bomb, I call it, waiting to happen.
Let's transition then, Ed. What you seem to be implying too is for people that need to do the backdoor Roth IRA, right? Where they need
Yeah, that's a good thing that you can do still.
Yeah, like, well, if we think tax rates are going up, we need to do that now too.
Yeah, that's good, but it's not the big money. The big money is in the big wholesale conversions, and nobody likes to do that because nobody wants to pay the tax. But what people are missing, that they're short-term thinking. They're short-sighted. That tax is going to be paid, not if, but when. And the classic foundational principle of all good tax planning, so you could save the most, is to always, and it's so simple, and people miss the boat because they're short-sighted, always pay taxes at the lowest rates. That's it. That's how simple it is. And that may be right now.
There is a change of foot when it comes to college planning. 529 plans, Ed, people have some long-term provisions they didn't have before. Tell us about those, because we might have
that's new.
Something cool.
That's new for this year. It's not going to solve the big problem. The big problem is people that took advantage. It's a great provision, these 529 tuition plans, where you put money away for kids and grandkids. And some people have put hundreds of thousands of dollars away. And I've talked to some of these families and now wish they didn't, because the darn kid got a scholarship. And now what do we do? And they have all this money, or they went into business or something. You know, remember, people make these plans when that kid is born. They don't know. And it sounds good. Every new parent, look, I'm a new grandparent. My daughter's, we got to do that right away. Yeah, because we know the kid's going to be in college. What do we know? Anyway, there's a way to whittle down those balances, new and secure 2.0, a provision that takes effect this year. Not going to solve the big problem for hundreds of thousands, because the overall limit on this provision is only 35,000. It's even less than that because you can't do it all in 1 year. But the provision allows 529 balances to be transferred directly to Roth IRAs for the child or grandchild who the 529 was set up for. But there are many limitations. First, to qualify, the account had to be set up for 15 years.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a long-term thing. And the last 5 years don't count. And it would have to go to the Roth IRA of the 529 beneficiary. And the beneficiary would otherwise have to qualify to make their own Roth IRA contribution by having their own W-2 earnings or self-employment income. And they can't have already contributed to a Roth, because you can't contribute to a Roth, say, this year is $7,000 and do this for $7,000. So you're limited to the annual amount. But this year, assuming the child qualifies on all of those, or the parents, or child, grandchild, they all qualify, you can actually double up. and not be limited to the, say, 7,000, because IRS has just confirmed that even though this provision, the transfer has to be a direct transfer from the 529 to your Roth, to the child's Roth, is effective this year. If you do it this year, and assuming the child otherwise qualifies, and you do it before April 15th this year, the normal deadline for making an IRA or Roth IRA contribution, it can qualify for last year, even though the provision isn't effective till this year. So you can put $6,500 in for last year. That was last year's amount, and do another $7,000. So that's you get a little bump, a little boost for this year. You can do $13,500. If otherwise qualifying, but still takes a while to get to the 35,000, but you can get a little boost. That's a little item that just came up for this year.
It used to be, Ed, that you could change, you know, the 529 plan beneficiary if they didn't use the money. Can I change the beneficiary to me and then stick it in my Roth IRA?
You know, you're asking a question, very brilliant, because everybody has asked the same question. Nobody knows the answer because it was not made clear in the law. And unlike the other provision where you could double up that I just talked about, where IRS just came out and said you could do it, they haven't given any guidance on that. But everybody, including me, thinks is one 15-year term. The big question is, do I have to start the 15 years over if I change the beneficiary? And I don't think that's the spirit of the law. That would be ridiculous. Every time you change it, you got to start another 15-year run. I think it's going to carry over, but we don't know for sure. But that's the number one question we're getting on this.
Well, and that's what we'll talk about next time you're with us, Ed. For people not watching us on video, hidden in the background, strategically, you can barely see it, there might be a book that covers some of this stuff, Ed.
Well, actually, it's not hidden. It's all over the place. but this is old already, believe it or not. I already just finished. I don't have a copy of it because it won't be out till June. I have a new version, which is updated for Secure 2.0 because of the IRS regulation. These things change all the time. You really have to keep up with this stuff. The new book is called The Retirement Savings Time Bomb Ticks Louder, because it's a ticking time bomb. And remember, we're in 24 now. 25 is the last year before rates are supposed to get jacked back up again in 26. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's what's supposed to happen.
Well, you've always said that at some point, back to your math comment, it has to happen, Ed.
Well, I believe in math, but you know, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. You're dealing with Congress. And any politician that tells you I can cut your taxes is really just saying I'm bad at math. Please help me.
Ed, thank you so much for being a mentor again to our Stacker community. I super appreciate you and your time, my friend.
Remember, tax-free is always better. Move your money from forever tax to never tax at low tax rates right now. That's the big message. IRA's bad. Anything tax-free like Roth, life insurance, even charitable planning, that's where you want to go.
We'll link to Ed's website and also to the Retirement Time Bomb Ticks Louder so you can pre-order it at our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks a ton, Ed.
All right, thanks.
Big thanks from Ed Slott. And of course, we'll have links in our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com, but also we will have more on Roth IRAs and tax planning in the 201 tomorrow. That's our big old famous newsletter. stackybenjamins.com/201 gets you signed up, always free and always action packed. Speaking of action packed, if your career could go better, maybe even if you think it's going fine, these are two women who rose through the ranks. And I think you could say by any measure, quote, made it. Grace Puma is the former executive vice president and chief operating officer for this little company called Pepsi. You familiar with the Pepsi Corporation, OG?
Yeah, it's that stuff you put in your Jack Daniels.
That's exactly. I'm sure that's how Grace defines it. Before that, she had senior positions at United Airlines, Kraft Foods, Motorola, and Gillette. She's been ranked on the most powerful Latina list by Fortune magazine, recognized as executive of the year by Latina Style magazine. Christina Smith, she is the former president of Nike's consumer direct division. Before that, she was the most senior partner at a little company called McKinsey & Company. Not sure if you've heard of that one as well, guys. Doug, yeah. You've been in the consulting business. You know that name.
I did. I know McKinsey. They are top shelf, man. When they're in your corporate offices, one of two things is going to happen. Major improvement to your business. Probably some cost optimizations.
Everyone's getting fired.
Doug is familiar with the phrases cost optimization and meet me at HR.
Yes. Bring a box.
Pretty sure that McKinsey has a trademark on right sizing.
Specifically right sizing Doug. They are up next, but to get there, Doug, while we rearrange microphones again, you've got today's bonus pack of 70s television.
I don't know. Let's find out. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Between Joe and OG and our guests, we have a lot of wacky characters here on Stacking Benjamins. I've always thought we'd make a great workplace sitcom like that that old show. Mary Tyler Moore. OG would be Lou. Grant, of course, because the dude's totally grumpy. Joe would be Murray, since he likes to give me a hard time. And I'd be Ted Baxter, of course, because I'm the boss around here. Just don't tell Joe that. I like to let him think he's in charge. Set in Minneapolis, the Mary Tyler Moore Show ran for 7 seasons and dealt with groundbreaking topics for the time, such as equal pay, birth control, and sexual independence. I talk about my own sexual independence all the time, but you don't see anyone giving me an Emmy for it. I'll show them. Wait, I can't show them, or you're going to call HR? Ah! All right, got it. Fine. My apologies. Where was I? While the show centered around a single career woman, the real Mary was actually married. Together with her husband, Grant Tinker, she launched MTM Enterprises, which produced her namesake show as well as dozens of others, including The Bob Newhart Show, Hill Street Blues, and Cheers. How to start my own production company. Then I can finally make the Joe's Mom's Neighbor Doug Show. That would be awesome. Today's trivia question is, what was Mary Tyler Moore's production company's mascot? Here's a hint. It riffs off one of the great entertainment mascots of all time. I'll be back right after I find where I flung my hat.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of 3 pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Hey there, stackers. I'm soon-to-be sitcom star and Stacking Benjamin's mascot, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. After the first season, the final lyric of the Mary Tyler Moore theme song changed from "You might just make it after all" to "You're gonna make it after all." I guess she really proved herself that first year of producing television. Today's trivia question is, what was Mary Tyler Moore's production company's mascot? The answer? Mary named her company MTM as a nod to industry giant MGM, whose iconic mascot was a lion. And so, for her own company, Mary went with a kitten. Oh, I get it. I get it. That's cute. And now, let's go from kitten to puma with 2 women here to teach you all it takes to make it to the top of your field. It's today's mentors, Grace Puma and Christiana Smith-Shee.
I'm super happy they're joining me in the basement. Christiana and Grace are here. How are you?
We're good. Nice to talk to you, Joe.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, it's great to talk to you, but I'm wondering this. How do 2 people with your resumes meet? Because I have to, you know, just thinking about your careers and all the things that you've done, I have to imagine that there's not a lot of time for just going out and meeting people that are doing the amazing things that you two are doing with completely different companies. I don't know who wants to take that question.
I'll start. You're right, Joe. As grownups, I think we all realize it's harder to make new friends, and you definitely don't join a corporate board to make a new friend, but that's exactly what happened with me and Grace. We both joined the same public company board as directors same day. 2 women, which means you notice each other right away in that environment. And we connected pretty early on. We have similar straightforward styles. We have, you know, similar deep expertise. Grace is in the operations field. Mine is in retail and consumer. But I could tell right away that when she said things, she knew what she was talking about. And you know, we're both pretty straight shooters. And so I think it started with recognizing and appreciating each other's contributions, but over time, getting to know each other better as people and really clicking as friends.
For people listening, by the way, in the audio podcast, that was Christiana, and we'll just do these introductions very quickly. But Christiana, I want to stick with you for just a moment on that, because I know from reading your book that you've been accused during your career of networking. I remember somebody rolled their eyes at you or something saying, you're networking all the time with people who this person thought was irrelevant to your career. And you kind of pushed back and said, it's never relevant. Tell me about you and networking and why.
Well, I didn't think of it as networking, Joe, and I think that's partly why it's more natural and more organic. I thought of it as connecting with people. What that particular colleague was reacting to was I was taking phone calls from people that were looking for jobs and trying to help them find jobs. They were either former clients of mine or former colleagues of mine, and it was during the Great Recession a few years ago. My perspective is what goes around comes back around. So if you actually want to build a professional network, and Grace and I believe that a professional network is one of the biggest assets you can have in your career, if you want to build a good one, then you've got to cultivate it just like anything else, and you've got to pay real attention to it. And the best way to do that is actually helping people when they reach out to you.
Grace, what do you remember from that first meeting with Christiana? You know, just give her the, pretend she's not here. Tell us the truth.
I always do.
Yeah, she always pretends I'm not here, Joe. That's
no,
what she
I
means.
Always tell the truth. Yeah, well, you know what I remember? I remember sitting down and we went out for a drink on Fisherman's Wharf after a meeting. And we started to talk about our personal lives and who we were as people. And one of the things we found is that we both had adult children, if you could call them that, they were in mid-career, and we really wanted to transfer knowledge to them and our experiences and transfer learning. And then we went on to talk about, you know, the amount of people that come for mentoring. And so it was really kind of rooted in how do you share your insights, and the insights and the learnings that we have and the strategies that we talk about in this book are very transferable and relevant to today. So from there, you know, with the intent of paying it forward and being able to help people have the benefit of some of the things we had to learn along our way, you know, we went and birthed the book. And the other thing is we really had an appreciation that, I mean, Christiana is an amazing person. We got to senior levels, very different paths. And that's very relevant because as we talked about it, we realized it's not about becoming me or her or what we achieved. It's about people really being able to realize their greatest potential and define their journey and their aspirations strategically. So, you know, that's really what this is about.
Can I ask you about that potential? Because you share, obviously, what are some alarming statistics for women in the workplace? And the two of you climb the corporate ladder at a time when I'm hoping it was more difficult. Is it getting better, Grace, for women?
I think every generation has its challenges, but I do think it's getting better for women, definitely. For one thing, you know, we're living in an environment now where businesses are much more flexible to men and women about how they achieve their career aspirations and how they're able to integrate. And we talk about this concept of 360-degree life, how they're able to integrate their personal lives and their professional lives so that they can be successful at both. So I think that's a key factor. I also think there's a key factor on the ability to get exposed to a lot of different opportunities and a lot of different industries now. So the hiring and the hiring base and people being more mobile opens up opportunities as well. So I do think it's, I don't want to use the word easy, okay? Careers will have our long journeys, okay? There's twists, there's turns, there's economic downturns. I mean, a lot of things that you're seeing today in the news. So it's not easy, but there is an infrastructure that's helping, I think, make this a little more achievable for people.
Christiana, the two of you draw a big difference between the job you're in today and the career you're looking to have. Can you talk about that? Because I think most of us get hung up in, well, I just want to be the best worker I am today. People will hopefully notice and I'll get promoted.
Yeah, I recall thinking those exact thoughts, Joe. So it's a very common thing. And there is nothing wrong with doing a good job at the job you're in today. We just want people to remember that your job is not your career. And so what does that mean? It's table stakes to be good at what you're doing right now. Grace and I talk a lot about a concept called professional equity, which is how you build credibility and a track record at work that you can then leverage and invest in a lot of flexibility and opportunities later. But you don't build that professional equity unless you're good at what you do. So when people ask me or Grace, how can we be you? How can we have your career? We always tell them, first things first, be good at what you do. Okay, but why is a job not a career? Because if you're just chasing the next title, the next salary bump, the next scope increase, you may find it's like jumping rocks across some pond and you get to the other side, but it's not a place you want to be. We want people to think about what their career destination is and what they want to do over time in life and what are the capabilities they're going to need to get there and what are the experiences they need and what kind of environment they want to work in and what people they enjoy being around and collaborating with. All sorts of questions we have in the book that you can do your own diagnostic. Put together your own career goals, right? We call it your cardinal direction. And then work strategically, as Grace said, to get yourself there over time versus I'm just trying to max out today in the job that I'm in.
You know, it's interesting because when you think about a career forward mindset and the description of really defining your cardinal direction and your strategic path, there's a ton of practical benefits to it. Okay. In addition to having a big career, you actually start to realize that you're driving your career, okay? You're not dependent on a particular company or a particular job for your career growth. You're determining how you're cultivating your skill sets, how you're growing, how you're building next-gen capabilities, and what jobs you take to help progress you to your aspirations. So the whole risk profile in your job of being, laid off or the fear of being laid off kind of goes away because you realize that you're going to be building marketability and you're going to be able to make choices in your companies and outside your companies. And that's a very empowering place to be through your career journey.
Is that what I'm looking for when I'm 30 years old, Grace? Because I hear you and Christiana talk and I think, when I was 30, my career was in such a fog, right? I mean, I'm with American Express. I have no idea really where I want to go. And when I hear this idea of having kind of this North Star, I just look back at me at that age and I go, I just didn't know what I was looking for. I mean, it's as simple as I want to run a company. But then again, I had twins. I had young twins at the time. I also wanted to spend time at home with them. You're speaking to a lot of people who were like the two of you, mothers and having a family. Grace, what does that North Star kind of look like if I'm 30 years old?
So it's a very good question. I mean, first of all, when you first get out of school and your first few jobs, you're learning what you like, you're learning what are the best environments for you, and that shapes a piece of it. But to your point about being 30 years old, I do think you may not know exactly, we didn't wake up and say, hey, I wanted to be the chief operating officer of a $100 billion company. What we did, though, is by the time I was 30, is start to realize that there were certain capabilities that, A, were starting to differentiate my ability to contribute, like leading transformations. I love transformations. There were certain types of work that gave me energy that I actually really felt were intellectually interesting. And that time I was in global procurement. So when you start to think about the type of work that you like to do and the type of ways you can contribute and grow, you start at 30 to shape what is it I want to be doing? And then you start to look for the right opportunities to cultivate environments and work like that. So it may not be, I want this particular job, but it starts to build the tracks towards what you want to aspire to.
Let's go even younger than that. My 30-year-old example earlier, Christiana, you made some big moves in high school. I mean, if we're talking to our youngest stackers, like just this idea, your parents want you to go to an affordable school. A lot of people, in finance, especially, we talk about you can get it here. You decided that Stanford was the place for you. Can you talk about your education decision and for our stackers that are maybe just starting out, how that can impact positively or negatively their journey?
I think education was one of my unlocks, Joe, to my career journey, because I was the middle child in a big family. We never had enough money to go around. I watched my mom, who had gotten married at age 20, go back to school after all of us were in school and go all the way through and get her PhD and doing it at night and doing it on weekends and taking years and years and years to write her dissertation. We used to laugh about it. Like, can you even find where it is when you need to work on it again? it took her a long time. But she never stopped, and she never explicitly told us that education was the ticket, but she spoke to it through her actions, right? The fact that even with five kids, she was willing to do night school and do all the other stuff she had to do with my dad's support. So I think I modeled that And as a kid growing up in San Diego, I also wanted to get out of San Diego. You know, at that time, it was kind of a sleepy Navy town, and I didn't know what I would ever do there that would excite me. We talk about how your career direction gets sharper over time. So in the earliest stages, it is okay if your career direction is, I want to learn X. I want to get an education. I want to understand how to do math, how to talk to people, how to make money. I want to just get smarter. Okay. And then as you do that, you start to figure out what subjects do you like and what subjects are you good at? What feels intuitive to you at school? What do people look at you and go, God, that comes so easy to you. I have to work so hard on that, right? For me, it was not science. For my sister, it was science. And it was very clear to me we were different because I took chemistry in summer school just because I had to take it and I couldn't wait to get over it, right? And she was, you know, biochem, blah, blah, right? That's what you do in school. Then you get out of school and we say, okay, get a job. That's how you figure out your cardinal direction at age 25 is you get a job. And as Grace said, you figure out from the jobs that you're doing one after another, where do you fit in? What do you like? Where do you hate getting out of bed every morning? Where are you jumping out of bed every morning? And if your job doesn't fit you at that age, switch. It's okay because you learned what a bad fit is. 30, though, as you picked a number, 30, you kind of drop the flag-ish around then because you're usually committing to other things in your life right around then. You start to actually ask yourself hard questions. You know, what am I good at? What do I want to be known for? What do I want to do in terms of impact? Do I like leading people? Do I want to be an individual contributor? You actually have enough of a runway behind you to answer some key questions. And we would just argue that process of asking yourself those questions can go on your entire life. And it's okay if things move and change a little bit in terms of the direction as you go.
I love this idea, and it kind of is shades of who the management guru in the 1990s. I think he still publishes from time to time. Tom Peters. Tom Peters talks about don't wait for your manager to train you. Like if you want to be good at your career, take control of your career. Like that's kind of what I'm hearing. The thing that I want to ask about is, Christiana, you talk about excitement and kind of following what excites you when you're young and what really lights you up and where those hot buttons are and if you're not getting it where you are now to move on. Both of you have changed companies many times. Grace, you had a very comfortable position at Kraft and moved over to an airline. Oh God. I just remember Warren Buffett saying that if anybody tells him to buy an airline stock, take two aspirin and
call him
when
the
fever's
right?
gone. Yeah. Right. But you moved because you said earlier you really like times of transformation and working through transformative opportunities. By the way, were you there when Oscar Munoz?
No, I was there when Glenn Tilton was there.
When Glenn Tilton. Okay. We had Oscar Munoz on last summer and boy, what a dynamic person. But let's talk about that move because that seems, you know, if we just kind of plot that out, that seems like going from a very safe place at Kraft to a very risky place with United.
Yeah, it was a very thoughtful but very high-risk move. And so why did I do it? I mean, people thought I was crazy. I was in senior levels at a food company doing well. But I left and took the chief procurement officer job at United Airlines for a couple of reasons. One was my daughter was still in high school, and it wasn't a time to move her. So I was getting called and ready for CPO positions, but I didn't want to relocate. But the real reason is, you know, Glenn Tilton was running the airline. He was an oil executive, and his intent was not to run the airline like an airline, but to truly transform it. And he brought in a lot of different leadership that had different types of expertise from different industries to be able to bolster what they already had and transform the airline and ultimately sell it off. So it was always intended to be a three-year gig, so to speak. But what I got out of it was I still left. A very stable food company went over there, and I was a single parent at the time. And very shortly after joining and transforming, if you would, the function, the procurement function I was running and building up the capabilities, the financial crisis hit. It was really scary. Our price had gone down. I used to joke with my boss, who was the chief operating officer at the time, to nearly the price of a latte. And, you know, I would sit there being the primary supporter for my family, and I was really wondering, what did I do? But what really happened was it gave me invaluable experience. I mean, first of all, I loved the 3 years that I had worked there because I could be part of a very lean management structure that went through transformation, but also went through major financial and business crisis. And being part of that, I was upfront and got exposure to being part of the decisions we were making to turn around the company and weather such a severe situation. So what I gained was invaluable skills, and I loved the people I worked with. And, you know, it was just like being on a SWAT team together, you know, and it was intellectually expanding. You know, after we got the company turned around, increased performance, and we were part of the team that sold it off and into a merger. And I went off, and it led me with the capability I built to the next big role, which was in the PepsiCo organization. You know, you can look backwards and say, wow, what were you thinking? Everybody thought, what was I thinking when I went? I would never trade that experience for anything. And part of what I had in the background was knowing that I had built professional equity, and I had ensured that I had built a nest egg that had things gone south and the financial crisis continued to hit the airline and maybe things evaporated, I knew I'd be okay. I knew I would still be able to count on being able to progress towards my career aspirations. But yeah, it was a great experience, and it was something that really helped shape me.
Christiana, same question, but you've got the opposite, right? Grace is looking at United as a 3-year gig. You're at McKinsey for, I think, 21 years. You stay with one organization for a long time. Talk to me about that and the different path that you took than Grace took.
So this is what Grace meant when she said, we discovered we both had very different careers, but very similar beliefs about what it takes to build a good career. In management consulting, because your teams change every time, it's project-driven work, right? For anyone who doesn't know, you're working with clients on particular issues for a defined period of time, and then you move on to the next project. I have kind of what I call a high rev. Like if I'm at a red light and I'm a car, you can imagine that I'm the one like revving the engine at the red light. And so that high turnover of new projects, new clients, new challenges for me was a constant process of reinvention. And then at the same time, it's a career path where you move pretty quickly to either succeed or to lead. So your typical path to partnership is about 6 years. You know, for someone like me, it meant that the level I was at, the managerial responsibilities I had, the clients I served, all of those things were changing constantly. And for someone like me, that was invigorating. And then 20 some odd years go by, as you said, I was the senior partner at that point. And I kind of look back and realize I feel like for the first time in my career, I'm kind of doing the same things over and over again. Because I'd been a senior partner for 10 years. I had a lot of stable clients, which is great. Loved them all. I'd seen a wide range of business problems. So there weren't as many like, you know, new crises that were coming at that I hadn't at least got some pattern recognition around. And that didn't work for me. You know, for me, I kind of like Grace going to United, I needed to raise the bar again. You know, we talk a lot about watching out for what we call benevolent stagnation, which is when you're in some place that's very comfortable and you're doing okay. And you lose sight of the fact that you can't really hold yourself in the same position forever because gravity will eventually pull you down. And especially in business today, if you're not moving forward, eventually you're going to move back. And I kind of had that realization. And that's the next time that I checked in with myself about my cardinal direction and what I wanted to do. And I realized what I wanted to do was be in a position where, in addition to solving tough problems, I could actually see the implementation of the solution all the way through and be responsible and accountable for whether it worked or it didn't work. And that's what led me to go from McKinsey to Nike.
Well, and even before that, I just love the reason you went to McKinsey in the first place, which it turns out, Christiana, was really, obviously, it's a great fit if you stay there that long, but you were at Merrill and didn't love the culture.
I was on the street, Joe. You would recognize this. Yeah.
That's where people lose their hair, Christiana, right there.
Yeah, or lose their mind, right? I mean, and I was there in the 80s. It was so go, go, go. It was total barbarians at the gate time. If anybody's ever seen that movie or read the book, Gordon Gekko, like flashy guys in suits and cigars and all that stuff. And, you know, almost no women. It's an example of what we talk about in the book, which is just get a job out of college. You're going to learn so much. So I needed to pay off my student loans. Investment banking was one of the highest paying starting roles that you could get out of undergrad. And I figured if I could do it for a couple of years, I'd make a decent dent in the big pile of debt that I had getting out of school. And so I did it for 3 years. I landed at Merrill and I really admire the firm. I still do. I got tremendous exposure and learning there. I feel like I grew up. I even learned like what cocktails do cool people drink when they go out. You know, I was kind of a student of the whole, like, oh, this is what serious work looks like. This is what big time players do. This is what, you know, because we were working with CFOs and CEOs and, you know, senior partners in the bank and all the rest of that. So I learned a lot, but I would say by my third week at Merrill, I wrote a note to myself that I was going to go to business school. And I'd never thought about business school before. And the reason was because I knew that the longest I could probably stand to work at Merrill was 2 to 3 years. At that point, I was going to have to go do something else. And business school or any additional education, as I told you, can be a great reset point. And so particularly knowing I wanted a business career, that was the right choice for me. And so I laid tracks for the next 2.5 years from Merrill to business school in terms of who am I going to get to know, who's going to write my recommendations, like thinking ahead so that I didn't get to applying to business school and have nothing to put on the application.
I want to go back to this idea of benevolent stagnation because, you know, you started to feel it at McKinsey after a long time there, which is great. If you can go 20 plus years in an organization and not feel that, like how wonderful is that? I remember, by the way, Christian, and there was a warning in your book, like the thing to watch out for is not just that you're stagnating, but the people around you are letting you stagnate. I remember we had this friend, whenever we had a really tough question, we would go to him because he knew everything. And then we realized that a lot of our paychecks were way higher than his was. And we were growth stocks, to use a term that you use in your book. And he was not. He was the guy we went to because we were very happy to have him stagnate and help our careers, which isn't good. But on the other side, Grace, you talked earlier about equity and building equity. And you guys talk about these equity players and knowing who the equity players are and you building equity in your career. Can you kind of define that for us? Because a lot of our stackers' ears perk up whenever they hear the word equity.
Yeah, sure. Well, it does resonate in the concept of looking at yourself as a growth stock, and that's how you build equity. So when you think about it, when we say growth stock, pick any company you want, you know, Apple back in the day. The growth stocks that are basically known to deliver exponential value over their competition for longer periods of time. When you double click beyond that, it's really around investing in the next level of capability and having the foresight for that. So take that concept and apply it to yourself. People who have a career forward mindset and manage their careers with as a growth stock, they're going to be investing, and other people like companies are going to invest in you to be able to grow their capabilities. And it's going to be way beyond what you do today. So professional equity is really one of the outcomes of that because you're ahead of the curve. You're not just looking at your performance review for today and that my boss loves me and that I'm doing good work. You're thinking about how I'm constantly ahead of the curve trying to build next gen capabilities and contribution. From that comes professional equity. And when you have professional equity, it gives you tremendous benefit. For one thing, it's going to open up all kinds of opportunities to you. When you raise your hand and say, gee, you know, I'd like to go lead this particular project that might be outside your scope, or I know the company's moving into AI, can I get exposure to that capability building? The answer is going to likely be yes. If you ever find yourself in a difficult situation or a change situation, you're likely to be able to have opportunities. So professional equity is really important, and it's rooted in a continual state of insatiable appetite to grow and to develop. And it's critical today.
I love this idea.
Well, Joe, can I give you an example?
Oh, please do.
Just to make it real. Grace and I said we wrote this book in part because we were advising our 30-something-year-old kids all the time. So my daughter-in-law, who is in her early 30s, has a baby, my first grandchild. She's 10 months old. She works in technology, and it's mostly a work from home, like a lot of tech companies. They're, you know, it's very flexible. But a couple weeks ago, she got invited to go to an offsite that was going to require a 3-day trip. Her first instinct was to turn it down because she's still nursing, to be gone for 3 days, the logistics, blah, blah, blah. She also knew if she went, she'd get a chance to meet senior management in person, which nowadays in the virtual world doesn't happen often, and there'd be a lot of good connections and a lot of learning that she would get, right? So she took it on herself to investigate some alternatives for how she could keep nursing, not waste the milk. I won't go into all the details, but any nursing mom knows all the calculations you're trying to make during that 3 days is a long time. She proposed to her boss that she sign up with a new subscription service that is actually aimed exactly at this, that helps women freeze and ship things home. I won't go into details, but it's the coolest thing. It's designed for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really cool. Don't ask me the name, but it blew my mind. But she did the research to find this solution. And she had the nerve to present it instead of saying, you know, which would be a lot of our first instinct, right? Well, I can't change the situation. It's either black or white. I either go or I don't go. She said, okay, I'm going to come up with an alternative. And then because she knows that she has built credibility with leadership, because she is good and they actually want her there, which is why they invited her, she had the confidence to present this alternative. And she said, I very much want to go. I think I can contribute a lot. I think I'll learn a lot. I need the company to support me by covering this cost, because it's not cheap. This particular service, as an example, if you can, as you can imagine, is not cheap. And they said, okay. And she went. She came back so energized and so recharged, not to mention two full nights of sleep, you know, which right, as a new mom is a rare thing. She, you know, she FaceTimed the baby a lot. She worried a lot, but she's so glad she went. And it's an example of, she had built professional equity. She's good. They want her. They want to invest in her. She took initiative to figure out solutions versus accepting a go, no go kind of framework. And then she had the confidence to present those solutions and ask for what she needed. And that's what we're talking about. If you build that equity, you can then invest it, quote unquote, by asking for the flexibility in these different situations.
Well, and what I love is that I know there's a bunch of our stackers that don't think that they have the skills yet. And yet you present many things that you learned in the book and how to teach them, like how to begin. I remember there's a woman in the book who is having trouble getting her point across in a room full of type A people. And you guys teach that. You open up talking about being on stage and how you had to learn to be somebody that could speak in front of it. You wouldn't do what the two of you have done your career without being able to speak in front of people. And those are just a couple amazing things. The book is called Career Forward, Strategies from Women Who've Made It. And I believe it is available
at Amazon.com and anywhere you buy books. So literally, you have no excuse. If you like what we've talked about, you can get a copy.
I have to, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a couple of questions that I'm sure on everybody's mind that have really nothing to do with career, but more about the places where you were. Grace, let's start with you. So the COO of Pepsi goes into a restaurant and all they serve is that evil Coca-Cola. What does the COO of Pepsi do in that situation? How do you navigate that?
You don't order a soft drink. If you want to take a step further, you make sure you give that restaurant information to your sales folks in the food service business. But yeah, I mean, you stand behind your brands and you don't. You drink water, you drink wine, you don't order a soft drink.
I thought you might walk out, but instead you're selling. You're like, what's the deal? Yeah. That's better. Yeah, make a new customer. Second question for you. You know, when people look at the brands behind Pepsi, they see all of these quirky brands. Like, you had no idea Pepsi was the company behind X brand. What's the one that surprises people the most about Pepsi when they hear that Pepsi is the parent company of this brand?
Yeah, so PepsiCo is huge, a $100 billion company. And I think the one that's interesting is probably the Frito-Lay business. They think Frito-Lay is a separate company, and it is a company, one of the big business units within PepsiCo. So when you're talking about Doritos or any of the other products, I think people think because of PepsiCo that they think it's primarily the beverage side of the business. And it's a very global business too. So there's a lot of other brands that are probably not as well known under the umbrella.
I look at some of those quarterly reports that you had during your time at Pepsi, and I think that my Dorito consumption helped float the company. So you're welcome, Grace. You're welcome.
And then, I was surprised Flaming Hots, right, Joe?
That's right.
Flaming Hots.
I was surprised you didn't name me.
I didn't know you then, Joe.
There's this guy in Texarkana. And then, Christiane, a couple for you that are similar. So, you know, there was this great movie, Air, last year in 2023 that I loved. Obviously, those are the early days of Nike. That kind of wheeling and dealing thing, is that still Nike lately?
There's a part of Nike that's constantly needed, and that's definitely sports marketing, because Nike is always looking for who that next big athlete will be that epitomizes the brand, that has the value that Nike has, and their sports marketing agents, you know, are out there looking for the next Michael Jordan. And I'd also say on the sales side, you know, Nike is very aggressive about growing the brand, but growing it in the right way. So there's absolutely those parts of the brand. But inside Nike, I think creativity is equally valued. And it's probably one of the most creative places I've ever worked, whether you're talking about marketing or you're talking about product design. It filled my soul, literally, to be surrounded by people that were so idea-driven.
And the last question for you, of course, about Nike was, I think a lot of that, as you know, springs from the shoe dog himself, Phil Knight. And, you know, not only does Ben Affleck enjoy, I think, presenting him as a quirky character, I feel like everybody's got a Phil Knight story, Christiana, about just, you know, brilliance and madness. So any good Phil Knight stories?
Well, first of all, I am deeply grateful to Mr. Phil Knight for supporting us on Career Forward. He actually took the time to write a blurb for the book. I just am so grateful about that. And it's a longer conversation about, again, how you build and invest in relationships, because I've known him since 1998 as a consultant. He was my client. Phil is pretty accurately portrayed in the movie, I would say. I'm not sure he completely agrees. He is an example of a CEO that isn't a big slap you on the back, extroverted guy. And I love that, because everyone thinks that to be CEO, you've got to be some big outgoing, you know, glad-handing guy. And that is not him, right? He's actually a pretty introverted personality. And like a lot of introverts, does a lot of thinking and recharging of his thoughts on his own. It's inspiring to work for someone like that, because it helps you realize that you don't actually have to be some prevailing style or model to be able to build something as phenomenal as Nike Inc.
I think, man, not just from that, but, you know, from the book Shoe Dog and from other stories, the fact that he thinks so deeply about so many things, I think shows why Nike's grown, because of his resilience and ability.
He's an example, too, of many stages in your career, because at this point now, a big focus for Phil and his wife, Penny, is philanthropy and the impact that they've had on healthcare in the Oregon community and now on access to fair housing and other things. It's staggering, right? He's also a model, I think, for once you've made it, how do you turn around and help others?
Grace and Christiana, thanks for mentoring our stackers today. I super appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
This is Daryl from Pennsylvania. When I'm not busy arguing with a four-year-old, I'm stacking Benjamins.
No, Daddy.
Thanks to Grace and Christiana. You know, OG, obviously so many of the things that they talked about resonated, but back to this idea of benevolent stagnation, and I told the story briefly, as you heard with them, but I totally remember just the dude in our office in Troy, Michigan, who we'd all ask the hard questions of. Hey, do you know what the contribution limit is for a Roth IRA for whatever? If we need to do a backdoor, how do we, you know, if we need to do this for our estate planning for our client, how do we, we'd ask him all the tough questions. And then one day I found out that his paycheck was roughly half of mine. It isn't about what you know.
I know the feeling.
Took the words out of my mouth, OG.
This is really hitting home.
It isn't.
Tell me more. Tell me more how you feel badly about that.
It isn't about what you know, but I think they hit it right. I mean, how many people do you know that, or how many times have you realized you need to make a change because of this? I'm just kind of stagnating. I'm just kind of sitting there in my career. Like, what am I doing here?
You know, I think people who are especially susceptible to that are people earlier in their career who are expecting, I mean, you've really been raised with your parents and then through the whole school system that your achievements will get recognized. Somebody's watching them. Somebody is going to assess them and say, you get an A or you get a D. Some people, not me, you know, or your parents are saying, good job, buddy. But you get into the work world and people are not paying that much attention to you unless you are on either end of the spectrum, unless you are the absolute superstar or you're really not getting your objectives taken care of. But that's the small minority of people. Everybody else in the middle, OG, you've got to promote yourself. You've got to figure out how to not stagnate for lack of self-promotion.
It's interesting that you talk about this at the school level, because I was having this discussion with my oldest about football. He's a junior, going to be a senior. They're redoing some of their football program. They're adding some new staff. And he's kind of stressed about that because he doesn't know the new staff as well as he knew the old coaches. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. Just set a good example and be in the gym and they'll notice. And he's like, they don't though. You have to, and he picked it up right away. He's like, you have to be the loud guy to be the one that they go, oh, we should give him playing time. He's like, if you're tied, they're not going to go with the guy who was in the gym the most, because they don't know. They don't keep track of that stuff. He says, I need to be the leader. I need to like promote myself, or his words, you know, around how do I step up so that not only am I noticed, but I'm like making sure everybody notices that I want to be noticed, which is kind of what you're talking about, Doug.
Yeah. I mean, we all love the idea of this pure meritocracy where you just do your job, do it a little bit better and a little bit more than what was defined on your annual objectives. You get noticed and everybody's happy. But in reality, the people who should be noticing, they've got so much on their plate that they have to be worried about that unless you really have done something outside of the normal control parameters, you sold the $2 million deal or something, you're
well,
not going to notice.
Well, that's why the idea of brand equity they talked about, Doug, was so important. And also the idea of the ability to speak up in meetings and to be able to be a part of the group is a skill that we can all learn. And we don't learn the soft skills. You talked about how, you know, in school, it's a meritocracy. We get an A, we get a B, we get a C, we get a D based on knowing the material. But we get on that team like, oh, gee, like your son. Now I got to know the coach. Coach has got to know me. Yep. The working world is much more like that team in so many ways. And the good news I think that they bring to the table that I loved is that you can learn those skills. And what always drove me crazy were the people in every organization I've worked with who have been like, I don't need to know those skills. I just need to know the stuff. And you know what? Those are the people that benevolently stagnate. use their phrase again.
Because those people who say, I don't need to know those skills, I'm going to let my work speak for itself. They're often the ones who say, I'm not a kiss ass.
Right. Yes.
You know, that's how it gets characterized because not many people enjoy tooting their own horn. But you've got to find a way to do it that works for you because otherwise you're not going to get heard.
It's big stuff. And there's people that'll even hear this interview and go, yeah, I don't think I need that. I think that's not for me. And you just missed out from two phenomenal mentors right there, if that's you. What's that? What's that shining light coming through the window? Oh, somebody said, we better call Saul. C-Hi, N-O-G, and like the bat signal all over Gotham, we just got the signal in the basement window. No?
It's just headlights, dude.
Wasn't that the headlight from Mom's Harley pulling in the driveway?
It could have been either or. It could have been, but I'm fairly certain that it was a call for help. If you've got a call, go to stackybenjamins.com/voicemail and we will help you. But let's see who needs our help today. I think it's Stacker Jared.
Hey, Doug, Joe, and OG. Jared here. Second time caller, long time listener. Someone just presented some information to me about Robinhood. Joe, I know you're not a big fan of Robinhood, but it almost sounds too good to be true. So I thought I'd get your take on it. They have a gold membership, which is $5 a month. And if you pay for that, you can transfer your IRAs to Robinhood and get a 3% match for a limited time. After that, I believe it goes to 1%. What's your take on this? Is this too good to be true? Let me know. I'm an XL working on double XL.
I love this guy.
Is Jared telling me that he's considering being bought by the evil empire for a couple bucks thrown his way, OG?
I mean, why not? Why not? Less money for them to have to evil empire with, right? I don't know.
To bid their evil.
Yeah, this is very common in the investment world, custodian space. Fidelity offers a very similar deal. Schwab will offer a very similar deal. So pretty common to get some sort of signing bonus, as it were. Transfer over $100,000 will give you $3,000. There's obviously some stipulations with that. You have to keep the money for a period of time. You have to, sometimes it's tied to trading. You move over your 100K, you're going to get this $4,000 bonus or $3,000 bonus, but you have to do, you know, 20 trades in the next 90 days or they recapture it or something along those lines, potentially. The bonus that they give you, generally speaking, is not a contribution to your IRA. So that money gets deposited into a different account and that's going to be taxable interest to you. That's how it's coded on your tax forms. So interest income is ordinary income. So it's not free. You're going to pay some taxes on it. But this is just like, you know, you get the things in the mail from the bank that say, hey, set up your direct deposit and we'll give you $300 or we'll give you $900 if you move over 20K. You can play this game all day long. However, eventually it gets tiresome or you burn through all of the places. But if you're, you know, if you're shopping to move somewhere, it doesn't hurt to ask, if they have any signing bonuses, as it were, to move your account over, especially if you got some decent money.
My feeling has always been, Jared, that you are a product of who you surround yourself with. And to OG's point, if Wells Fargo said, hey, we'll give you a few hundred bucks if you open 18 accounts, you do one application, we'll open 18 accounts for you. Like we all go, are you kidding me? Why would I do business with a company that just did that? That's really what you're asking. It's the same thing. Bank of America, also not my favorite company because of my relationship with them in the 90s and how they were helping me dig my hole faster when I was digging myself into a horrible spot.
They were handing
spot.
You shovels?
They were handing like, me bigger and bigger
there,
shovels.
Would you like a backhoe?
And then when I actually needed their help, it was like, oh, what? You know, and somebody told us the other day, of course, that banks want to loan a lot of money to people that don't need it. But anybody that needs any help, whoa, hey, no, not our
well,
business
model.
Well,
they did summarily close the Stacking Benjamin's bank account a couple of years ago, if you recall.
For no reason.
A letter that just said, we don't want your business. Like, okay. It probably has nothing to do with us talking Bank of America the entire time. But
not at all. The good news is they assured us it wasn't us because legally they can't do that. It had to be a class of people. And the class of people were people that talk Bank of America.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't say what the reason was. They didn't say.
I do businesses, Jared, with businesses I respect. I don't care what the come on is. There's always a come on. And you know what? Then I'm stuck there. So do your homework on Robinhood. Man, if you find less than I found about Robinhood and you find that if to you, all those past transgressions mean nothing and that they're going to be good to you where they haven't been good to people in the past, well, then by all means, bring it.
Yeah, I don't think Jared's above this. Look, he called us just to get a t-shirt. So I don't, he is not above taking whatever they're handing out.
It's a good point. That is a very good point. It's like, whatever. He's already got the application filled out. Just wait to watch my blood pressure pop.
3% because that's 3% less money that they can do evil with.
There it is.
It's
and then
it's
move
logic.
It out the day that you're allowed to. And don't do any trades because they're just going to front run them, making more money on that. That doesn't make money for you. They're just going to hand off your trades to other organizations and you won't make any money on those either. But not something.
Let's move our money to Robinhood and get their 3%.
I look past the bonuses. What was funny was I can tell nobody from Robinhood listens to the show because you guys know we just got a pitch from them this week asking if they could send somebody on the show. The pitch in the subject line, it said defending our honor. No, it didn't. It did not say that.
Tell me you don't listen to the show without telling me you don't listen to the show.
Oh, we love your show. We'd love to have so-and-so from our organization come on and chat with you guys. Yeah, might not be having. Thanks for the call, Jared. If you've got a question such as that one, which is a lot of fun, we will do what we're going to do for Jared here. We're going to send him an XL, working on XXL, XLL, XXLL for being brave and for calling in. It's a great time, by the way. The spring every year is a great time to call in because we're traveling and we record a little bit further ahead. We can get to your question slightly sooner. StackingBenjamins.com/voicemail.
We're traveling, Joe.
We, me and Cheryl.
Am I going somewhere with you?
neither of you. Sadly, because I invited OG six times before he says he wasn't invited. I invited him over and over and over and over, and he just didn't take it.
I don't think I was invited.
Yeah. Wow. Wild. Mine got lost in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not worried about just whether you should take the Robinhood bonus or not, you're worried that your money's going a different way than your values. Well, then I think you want better help. Head to StackingBenjamins.com/OG because OG and his team are accepting new clients right now. That means that if you go to StackingBenjamins.com/OG, you'll get a link to their calendar that schedules a first meeting. And that's the first step in seeing how they can interface with you to make better decisions in the future. All right, time to wander out on the back porch. And Doug, we got a lot to do in a short amount of time here, man.
We do it. You want to continue our discussion about the show reviews that I started last week and then you just summarily cut me off on? Do we want to talk about some great reviews that we had left for us in the basement? How do you want to proceed here, boss man?
None of the above. I think we got to go right to the joke off because we've got a brand new joke that, in the next round here that we've got to shine a light on. The number 7 versus number 14 seed to see who goes to the final 4. pretty exciting. Karen just placed this one in the basement so that people can vote on which one they want.
This will round out our final four, right?
This is it.
This is it. You take seven because you always get the higher seed.
All right.
So bring it.
Jeff says, what's the difference between taxes and taxidermy? One's cruel and inhumane. The other deals with dead animals. That's a good one. And, I like that one.
Jeff's headed right up against Seth, who submitted, hear about the constipated mathematician? He worked it out with a pencil.
Oh, boy. So, dead animals versus constipation. Which one do you think is funny? Potty humor versus death humor. You can vote at our Facebook page, stackybenjamins.com/basement gets you right there. Just sign up. We approve you. And then you're in and chatting away with all of us and some fun stuff. We share not just the joke off, but also what everybody's been reading that week, what cool things our Stacker community has been doing. We play some of those on the show. Tons of great posts, people asking each other great questions, and of course, some other dad jokes on top of these. So next week, we begin the final four.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting. Doug, so why don't we set the clock for a minute?
Oh, God.
And we'll spend a minute picking up where we left off. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
Here we go.
So I rewatched a great documentary called Last Breath. Would strongly recommend this. Big thumbs up. It actually uses actual footage of the event in question. It's about a profession you didn't even know existed. It's deep sea divers who help get oil wells out in the North Atlantic and in the North Sea. And I mean, just horrible, horrible places on this earth. Great documentary. Highly recommend. Watched American Symphony. Did not love that, about a great musician, Jean-Baptiste. Love his music. An incredibly talented guy. Just bored with that movie,
really?
American Symphony. Yeah.
That surprises me.
Didn't love it. I know it. I thought I would love it.
That's really the same thing about, Leonard Bernstein as well. I thought I would have loved that, but I didn't learn anything about Leonard Bernstein during that movie.
Yeah, that was an excellent point you made about, I think you were right. You didn't learn about all, you learned about his quirks.
Yeah.
And weirdnesses. And maybe that's why they'd you could go find out about his accomplishments anywhere you want. We're going to give you the backstory on Lenny. Maybe that's why they did that. But I understand your point there. All right. Fool Me Once, two thumbs down. Another ridiculous show. I think it was Netflix. Just a British show. Normally I'm all into the British crime formula shows. Love them, but this one sucked.
What's it about?
Fool Me Once. It's about a woman whose husband dies and you think he's dead, but maybe he's not dead. And, it just so happens that she happens to be ex-military and a helicopter pilot. So that's convenient because then, they move the plot along because she'll be up teaching somebody in her helicopter and spot a car 6,000 feet below her that she wants to follow. So she'll follow the car. Yeah,
of course.
Just ridiculous, stupid
Easy.
Stuff.
Easy to pick out a car from 6,000 feet.
I know. Okay. Even if it was 600 feet, the fact that she's just able to conveniently be there and then she goes and lands.
Well, how some people in high school, you put kick me on the back of somebody's.
Yeah. Never happened to me, but I know what you're talking about.
Allegedly it happened.
You do the same thing on these shows. You just hit a follow me and put it on the top of somebody's car. And she probably saw that.
Right.
I'm sure that was it.
Bad guy this way. Right.
Cheryl told me that I was hoping you were going to say that that's apparently David Tennant has a new crime series out, which, I mean, if one of the two main actors of Broadchurch out with another one, can't wait for
promising.
Can't wait for promising. That. Yeah, we'll see. But we're out of time. That's it for today.
Nope. Bull crap.
That is it for
There's
today.
No way I'm letting you start talking and it steals away from my minute.
I started talking well after the minute. We were already at 2 minutes when I started talking. I stopped the clock before I started at 1:55.
Unbelievable.
So, there's more. It's exciting.
When we do your reviews,
we are slowly releasing the Kraken.
We get 3 minutes of trailer that nobody knows because it's just explosion noises and symphonic music. We have no idea what it is.
Sets the mood.
Before we even start talking about it.
Sets the mood. It's wonderful. By the way, we'll do that soon with Argyle. I just saw Argyle in the theaters. Great stuff.
Hey, Doug, what should we have learned today?
Okay, fine, OG, I'll move things along. What's on our to-do list today? First, take some advice from Grace and Christiana. Don't wait for someone else to train you to be great. Move your career forward by taking control and building equity. Second, take some advice from Ed Slott. Get that Roth started. But what's the biggest to-do? I gotta get Joe to add my picture to the Stacking Benjamins logo. But then again, that might make it too sexy. Huh, it's quite a dilemma. Thanks to Ed Slott for joining us today. You can find out more about his work at irahelp.com. We'll also include links in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. And thanks to Grace Puma and Christiana Smith-Shee for coming on the show today. You can find their book, Career Forward, anywhere books are sold. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2024, and is created by Joe Salcihi. Our producer is Karen Repine. This show is written by Lisa Curry, who's also the host of the Long Story Long podcast, with help from me, Joe, Kate Youngkin, Karen Repine, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. Kevin Bailey helps us take a deeper dive into all the topics covered on each episode in our newsletter called The 201. You'll find the 411 on all things money at The 201. Just visit stackingbenjamins.com/201. Wonder how beautiful we all are? Of course you do, but you'll never know if you don't check out our YouTube version of the show, engineered by Tina Eichenberg. Then you'll see once and for all that I'm the best thing going for this podcast. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude, Stacy Doe, and Julia Garib are our social media coordinators, and Gertrude is the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So say hello when you see us posting online. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. For more interactive fun, join us on Instagram every Tuesday and Thursday for our Instagram Lives. Kate Youngkin and Joe host those weekly. Not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show.